And welcome to the Rick House. Cyrus Farmer once again here with the Stomp the Tea podcast. We are going to go through a number of different items tonight, so let me tell you what you can look forward to. First things first, we're going to be talking about what are the biggest challenges to your playing your best golf. I mean, again, is it weather? Is it tight lies? We're going to go over all that. I'm going to give you four or five of my biggest issues that I have to deal with if I want to play good golf. We're also going to be talking about airplane pillows. Do you use them? Do you not? I have not been an early adopter of airplane pillows, and I think I might have used one once in my life, but we're going to talk about one tonight that I think you'll find interesting. And of course, the ever popular, what are you drinking tonight? So, let's get started, but I do want to do a little housekeeping first. If you remember from last episode, I issued a little bit of unsolicited advice to the Eagles coach, Nick Sirianni, and to their credit, and to his credit, he had his team ready to play. They went up there to New York and beat an awful Giants team. They beat them handily. It was another slow start, but once again, all that matters is the end result. And they beat the Giants. They beat them the way they're supposed to. The Giants are a bad team. I still don't understand. If you're the Giants, why would you continue to play Daniel Jones? Not that it makes a difference. I mean, you're trying to get the first pick in the draft so you can pick whatever quarterback you like. You have talent with Malik Nabers. You made a mistake with Daniel Jones, but it is what it is. So if I'm the Giants, I play lock the rest of the season if I can, and then just try to get your hands on a quarterback if there's one you like in this draft. Now, it's going to be interesting to see what the Eagles do this coming weekend against a quality team that's played better of late, and that's the Cincinnati Bengals. I want to see what that young defense can do against an offense that's playing well. Joe Burrows, Ja'Marr Chase, they're all doing a great job. The defense, look, they're supposed to beat up on bad teams. But this past weekend, this past Sunday, was the first time I felt like I saw the Eagles pre-2023 collapse. You know, it was like the first 10 games of the season for the Eagles. And you know, they didn't turn the ball over. And when they don't turn the ball over, they're going to be in every single ball game. They just have too much talent on both sides of the ball, especially on the offensive side of the ball. So we'll see what the Eagles do this week against Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals. Should be an interesting game. I also want to talk a little bit about the World Series. I have to say, this whole, I haven't been into baseball for a little while now. The pitch clock, I think, helped. But, you know, as a man who's been married 25 years, some of you are different. But I couldn't sustain my marriage for 25 years by watching NFL, college football, college basketball, pro basketball, Major League Baseball. I mean, you have to give some kind of break on the sports calendar. You know, I watch a ton of golf also. So what kind of ended up taking the hit for me was Major League Baseball. The game had gotten slow. I wasn't really into it as much. You know, I'm a Yankee fan, but, you know, of late they hadn't really played that well. But I do have to say, this is going to be a really interesting World Series. I think I'm actually going to try to catch some of it. You know, one of the reasons I became a Yankee fan is because of that 1977 and 78 Bronx Zoo Yankees. I mean, with Reggie and Thurman and Chambliss, Mickey Rivers, Guidry, you know, Catfish. I mean, it was just a great, great team, but an equally great cast of characters. I was a huge Yankee fan. And oddly enough, you know, I was a big baseball card and football card collector in my youth. So I know that Dodger team really, really well as well from the 70s. I mean, Garvey, Davey Lopes, Dusty Baker. Who was the guy? Steve Yeager, the catcher, Steve Yeager. It was a fun Dodger team. I think there were a couple pictures they had. Who was the guy? I think it was a knuckleballer. But that Dodger team was a fun team to watch. And those were great series, 78, 77. And also, I think it was 81 when Reggie and Winfield ended up losing to the Dodgers. But I think it's going to be a great series. I'm really looking forward, and I got to be honest, I'm really looking forward to seeing how these two marquee franchises perform for all the marbles. I mean, Shohei Ohtani, Aaron Judge, I mean, Mookie Betts, Juan Soto. I mean, I think it's going to be a fascinating series. And honestly, I'm actually going to be into baseball for the first time in years. So I'm really, really looking forward to that World Series. Can't promise I'm going to watch every inning of every game, but I will be checking in. So let's get to it. Biggest challenges on the golf course. Now, folks, I got to tell you this. If you haven't heard me say it before, I'll say it now. I am a lousy golfer. I mean, that is just as simply as I can put it. I'm horrible at the game of golf. But I play quickly, and I am fantastic company on the course. So there is that. And I love the game. So, I mean, look, at the end of the day, it's not how I make my living. So I can't get, you know, mad and snap clubs and throw tantrums just because I duff a ball on my second shot. But I will say this, if it was that important to me, I would play more. Now, for me, golf is the kind of thing where someone asked me once, well, you play golf, why don't you take lessons? I'm like, I don't have enough money to play golf and take lessons. I can either take lessons or I can play golf. I'd rather play golf. So I live with the consequences. Some of the biggest hurdles that I face, number one, I got to tell you, bunkers. It is very, very, very challenging for me to get in and out of bunkers consistently, whether they be greenside or whether they be fairway bunkers. For whatever reason, whenever I try to thump the sand, whenever I try to use the bounce on the club, whenever I try to actually use technique that is admittedly self-taught, more admittedly, incredibly poorly, it produces very inconsistent results for me. So whenever I'm on a golf course, I will take a double or triple bogey just to avoid a greenside bunker because I can't guarantee I'm going to get out in one, number one, and number two. I can't guarantee when I do get out, it's going to land on or stay on the green. So if that's a problem for me, I try to navigate my way around that. It's a big deal. It's definitely a challenge. Another challenge for me are what you call forced carries. Now, those of you who play golf understand what that means. Those of you who don't play golf, let me try to explain it. A forced carry is when you are on a tee box and in order to reach the fairway or the left rough or the right rough, you have to hit the ball over something, whether it's a body of water, whether it's wild branca, whether it's native brush, but it's going to be an area that's between the tee box and the fairway that you actually have to make sure you hit it over because you're not going to be able to go in and get your ball. Because it's just, it's either a canyon or some kind of chasm. It's something that literally forces you to carry the ball from the tee on your tee shot over to the next playable area, which is the fairway. Forced carries are, they come and go as far as popularity and design. There are several golfers who are not fans of playing courses with force carries because, again, it basically makes you take a stroke or drop on the other side in order to play that hole or for that round. It's just not as much fun. And there's a big psychological element to it as well. You know, it's like seeing water. Sometimes when you see water on a hole, either to the right side of the fairway, to the left side of the fairway, in front of a hole or surrounding the par three, it is a psychological challenge. Can you block that out, focus on the ball, focus on seeing your club hit the ball, and then look up and see where it goes from there. So force challenges are a psychological wrinkle that some designers like to use more than others. I am not a huge fan of playing holes with forced carries or courses with forced carries. I've done it before. I'll do it again, but it's not my favorite type of golf. Now, what else do we have? Oh, this is a big one. Tree-lined, tight fairways. Okay, now I already told you guys that I am a lousy golfer. Okay, so that means that probably about 85% of the time, I will aim at a target, but 85% of the time, I won't know where the ball is going to go. I don't know where it's going to end up. I go through a routine. Every time I get over the ball, I have the most optimistic feel you could ever have. But because I'm a lousy golfer, oftentimes I get poor results. So if I have a tree-lined tight, when I say tight, I mean narrow, right? A narrow fairway. That spells real disaster for me. My natural ball flight is a baby draw, right? So what does that mean? It means if I'm standing on the tee, and whether I'm hitting driver or three wood, when I hit the ball, when I'm swinging well, when I hit the ball, it's going to basically go slightly, it'll go up in the air, but slightly right to left in a very gentle manner. It's going to be, it's what's called a baby draw. Now, if your ball goes left to right, that's called a fade, right? But if your ball goes left to hard right, that's called a slice. Now, my natural swing shape, again, is a baby draw. So when I'm playing golf and I have a fairway that's surrounded by trees, I don't have the ability to consistently hit the ball straight. So if I have trees on the right-hand side of the fairway, my baby draw, that's if I hit the club, the ball well, has less room to draw back into the fairway. So it's a problem for me. It's also, to be quite honest, intimidating. You know, when you play golf the way that I do, you want as much elbow room as possible. You want wide open spaces, believe me. Okay, there's two other things that I wanted to get into. And they're kind of like pet peeves for me. The first is slow play. It is a huge, huge challenge for me personally. Now, I know that I've played a lot of golf with people, and sometimes people think that whenever they have to wait on a tee, that the people who are in front of them are slow, and that in turn makes them have to wait. That's not always the case. Sometimes the slow players are two groups ahead or three groups ahead. And there's nothing you can do about the group in front of you. They have to wait too. Now, what's worse? Slow play from the group ahead of you. Let's just say they happen to be the offenders. What's worse? Slow play from the people ahead of you or slow play within your own group. You got a buddy who takes 15 practice swings to step in front of the ball and hit it 15 yards and then starts all over again. I got to tell you right now, slow play is bad news. It's really, really disruptive to a round. And I can't stand having to wait on a tee because the group in front of me decides to four-putt every hole. Every member four-putts on the hole, and they make sure that the ball goes into to the cup, and then they're going to take their time on the next tee, right? But I will tell you this. There is nothing, in my opinion, nothing worse than having a slow player in your group, whether you know them as a buddy, a relative, a friend, or it's some stranger you're playing with. Slow players in a group are the worst, simply because not only does that slow player mess with your rhythm, even if you play ready golf, they can mess with your rhythm, because if you got a slow player and they're hitting basically three in the fairway, you're on your second shot trying to go for the green, even if you're playing ready golf, you still have to wait for that slow player to make their way to the green. You can't just putt out and meet him at the next tee. So it's a huge problem. In addition to that, with a slow player, it always, subconsciously and physically, speeds me up more than I want to. As if I could make up for someone else's slow play by playing even faster. It's the worst. So do me a favor. If we ever play golf together, I don't care if you're great, you can be a scratch golfer. I don't care if you're lousy. You can shoot 200 in an 18-hole round. Play quickly. Play efficiently. All right? It makes all the difference in the world. You don't mind being on the golf course if you can just get around in a solid fashion. Second thing, it's a big pet peeve for me. And I am definitely probably going to be an outlier here, but I'm going to say it out loud anyway. I'm not a fan of music on the golf course. I'm just not. I find it incredibly distracting. I really, really do. I have a buddy who likes to play music on the golf course. And sometimes when we play for money, lousy as I am as a golfer, he will try to play music to make me even more lousy. Well, that's just not happening. We won't play golf if I got to play the music. It's strange because sometimes I'll practice hitting balls in my backyard, let's say, and I don't have music on my AirPods, or I'll put on my Sony Bose Link and play some stuff on my phone. But for whatever reason, when I'm on the golf course, I do not want to have any music at all. It is literally distracting. And it is amazing how many golf courses nowadays just seem to be fine with people bringing their jawbones and their little Bluetooth speakers on the golf course and playing music. I literally don't understand it. It's not how anybody that I play with makes their living. But boy, oh boy, if I'm going to try to enjoy a round of golf, I don't need to be, you know, bobbing my head to some music. I need to concentrate on trying to hit this ball because I don't know where it's going to go anyway. So those are some of my big issues when it comes to playing good golf, things that I have to confront that have consistently been a problem for me that I found over the years that make it difficult for me to play golf at my best when I'm even capable of doing that. So moving on. Airline pillows. Do you guys use airline pillows? You know, you see some of these people walking in the airport. They'll have those airplane pillows. You know, like the horse collar that you see, full of foam. Some are tied, some are open. But they get on the plane and then they lean their head to the side and that's how they sleep. My wife recently turned me on to a company. It's called Ostrich Pillow, and they make a variety of products, some of which are airplane pillows, right? Let me tell you a little bit about this company, and then I'm going to show you the product that I purchased from them that I will be using on an airplane coming soon to an airport near you. So, the company apparently was founded in 2012. Their focus, as I read my notes, their focus is rest. They believe that getting good sleep and making space to recharge is just as important to your well-being as eating well and exercise. It's a pretty good mission statement. I mean, what's not to like there? That makes perfect sense to me. Ostrich Pillow wants to make prioritizing moments of rest. And whenever you go to their website, they spell rest with a capital R-E-S-T. So it's literally a point of emphasis for them. That's how you know, because the R is capitalized. So they want to make prioritizing moments of rest just as habitual as brushing your teeth. Well, hey, once again, can't argue there. What could possibly be bad about that? We should all be looking to get more rest, and we should all be trying to make space and time to get more rest. Rest doesn't always mean sleep. Sometimes it just means closing your eyes. It says that they spend an average of 1,200 hours developing their products. A lot of research, a lot of development. Kudos. They say durability is a key aspect of sustainability. Now, this company leans very forward into doing what's right for and by the planet. This is how you know. They say less manufacturing equals less waste, which is better for the planet. That's why they focus so much on durability and sustainability. Now, they say that their return rate for all of their products is around 3%. They say the industry standard is more closer to 10%. So it tells you that once people buy their product, they seem to be pretty happy with the product that they receive. So, what is the product, you might be asking? Sai, tell me what it is. Okay. The product that I bought is called, I'm going to read it verbatim. It is called the Original Ostrich Napping Pillow. What is that? Well, I'm going to show you. Now, before I do show you this, to be fair, the Original Ostrich Napping Pillow is technically not described by them as a travel pillow. It is a pillow that you can use in many circumstances for rest. But I'm going to be using it as a travel pillow. Now, who knows? Maybe some of you have seen this product before, but I'm going to show it to you right now. And just tell me what you would think when you saw me pull this out of my carry-on bag and put it on to catch a couple Z's in the seat next to you. Hold on. This is the Original Ostrich Napping Pillow. This ridiculous looking contraption is what we've been talking about. Now, let's be fair. My eyes are closed. It kind of blocks out the light. It definitely gives you kind of a cocoon feel. These little holes up here, they're for you to put your hands in if you want to sleep face down or on your back. Guys, this product, I have to say, seems fairly comfortable. I'm not going to lie. It does seem pretty comfortable. But can you imagine seeing anyone on a plane pull this contraption out and put it on their head. Worse, can you imagine someone using the original ostrich napping pillow and not sleeping? Let's say they get the pillow on, they're trying to sleep, but they wake up right around when the beverage service happens, and they're like, yes, can I have a Diet Coke and with a little bit of ice? Oh my gosh, what a disaster. And to boot, let me show you the cover of the box that it comes in. All right, so for those of you watching, who puts this pillow on and sleeps at their desk? If you go to their website, they will show you all types of images of people using the original ostrich napping pillow in what looks like their home. They are either in their home office, they're in their living room, sleeping with the original ostrich napping pillow. Why would you do that instead of just going to bed or laying on your own couch? It's very strange marketing. But to be fair, I will be using this on an airplane, probably more than once. Seems fairly comfortable. I will report back the results. But I have to tell you, I'm not sure if it's going to be the most comfortable product I've ever used or not. But I will say, if it's not comfortable, you're going to look like an idiot anyway. But if it's not comfortable, you're going to feel like an idiot. So I'll let you know. I'm going to try it out. And if you see me in an airport, you can ask me about the pillow. I will definitely tell you my thoughts. So that brings us to, obviously, our most popular segment. What are you drinking tonight? So, as always, I'll ask you, folks, what are you drinking tonight? I can tell you, me, personally, I am drinking something that I think is a very, very, very good pour. Heaven Hill, bottled in bond. This is their bourbon. Now, you'll see this product on shelves. It is readily accessible. Runs about $50 a bottle. As we talked about last week, bottled in bond, what does that mean? There are certain qualifications and classifications that you need in order to be given that designation. But by definition, if it is bottled in bond, you know for a fact it cannot be less than or more than 100 proof. By definition, if it's bottled in bond, it has to be 100 proof, which is 50% ABV. Now, generally speaking, I usually lean towards higher proof bourbons and whiskeys. But for this, it is so well done. You really cannot go wrong having it in your bar. I mean, it is, like I said, $50 a bottle. It's the Heaven Hill Distillery. They're in Bardstown, Kentucky. They do a number of different products you've heard of before. Parker's Heritage, Larceny. They also produce Elijah Craig. They produce Evan Williams. They produce a number of different products. They're known for their quality. Now, this bourbon is aged 7 years. And that 7 years goes a long way towards smoothing it out. Really just kind of, I mean, if you want to be honest about it, it's a little soft on the palate. Not in a bad way, but that's the 7 years taking off the rough edges of the bourbon itself. Now, they store that bourbon in a barrel with a number 3 char, which is, I think the number 3 char means you char it between 45 and 60 seconds. And so it has solid color, unique flavor, very well done. It's a great, got a great finish. You know, when we discussed before with Bottled and Bond, we did this last week, we talked about how prior to the Bottled and Bond Act of, I think it was 1897, you just didn't know what you were going to get in these bottles of whiskey that you open. I mean, some people would, they would like lace their spirits with prune juice. Some people would use water that had been steeped in tobacco. Some people even used kerosene. You didn't know what was in the bottle before the Bottled and Bond Act of 1897. That's why it's, again, it's the first Consumer Protection Act legislation ever passed in this country. And that's literally part of the reason why it's so important. Now, the number of people who make Bottled and Bond, again, as I gave you the stats before, it's not very many. Heaven Hill happens to be one of the, they produce more Bottled and Bond products than any other distillery. Although I think New Riff is kind of taking a page from their book, and they do quite a bit of Bottled and Bond products as well. Now, I want to tell you a little bit about some of the packaging. If you see this label, whenever you look at a bottle of bourbon, but this bottle in particular, you see this illustration here? That is hand-sketched drawing of the original distillery in Bardstown, Kentucky. So that's on every single bottle. And this label down here, this is going to tell you, it uses letters, you see that DSP, right? That DSP right there. So DSP is a designation. It stands for Distilled Spirits Plant. So for every Bottled and Bond product, you have to let your consumer know where it was distilled and where it was bottled, if it was bottled in a location that's different from where it was distilled. Now, they have these codes. These codes are on the bottles, and you can look them up online. What is the code? This code is DSPK-1. Right? You can literally put that in Google and it will tell you where that designation is. So the DSPK-1, that represents where the bourbon was produced. And this was at the Bernheim Distillery. Heaven Hill also produces Bernheim. The Bernheim plant that they have in Louisville. And this second, which is here, right there, that second DSPK-3, three one? Yeah, it tells you it was bottled, where it was bottled, and that was bottled at their Bardstown facility. So, what are you drinking tonight? Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond 7-year-old bourbon. Now, I'm telling you, this bourbon is completely worth having in your bar. It's never gonna hurt you. Again, it's only 100 proof. So you can drink it neat, you can drink it on the rocks. I wouldn't mix it in a cocktail. It's too flavorful, honestly, to mix into a cocktail. Just drink it straight. You'll be fine. Take small sips. But it is completely worth having in your bar. I'm a big fan of Heaven and Hell Bottled and Bond, their 7-year-old product. So that is a wrap for tonight's show. I will tell you this, folks. Next week, actually this weekend, we are going to be in the Motor City, Motown, Detroit Rock City, Detroit, Michigan. And we have a lot of fun and interesting content that's going to be we're going to be digging into while we're out there. You'll see it all on next week's show. So don't forget to tune in for that. Detroit, we're coming to see you. I might be wearing an original ostrich napping pillow on my way there. Maybe on my way back, who knows? But Detroit, looking forward to seeing you. Everyone else, thank you. Don't forget to subscribe, watch, tell your friends, enemies. We are in the process of getting an audio version of this podcast set up on Spotify and Apple and all that stuff. And we still are continuing to get the website in order. So please be patient. That is coming. You'll be able to find all our content there eventually. So for now, Cyrus Farmer, Stomp the T. Thank you again for watching. And we will see you, as always, on the first tee.